Welcome to Hero Hype, episode 42. We are back again, another light TV show week this week. But we do have a couple of things to talk about ahead of the Daredevil premiere, because I hope you guys are ready for this weekend. It is gonna be intense. As always, I'm Danya, and I'm joined by my co-host, Caitlin.
Hello.
And if you guys want to get involved in the conversation with us, you can do so by getting hold of us on Twitter, which is at HeroHypePodcast. You can send us an email, which is HeroHypePodcast@gmail.com, or you can leave a comment on this post when it goes up on Hypeable.com. But we're going to get right into things this week, and seeing as it's a very Daredevil celebration, and we've got a couple of new characters coming at us in the new series, thought I'd give you a brief history of Frank Castle, who is the Punisher. Now, if you guys don't want to know anything about Frank Castle or Punisher before Daredevil Season 2 and watching it, skip forward about 2 or 3 minutes. That's usually about as long as this takes, and you should miss this section entirely. Okay, but if you do want to hear about Frank Castle, then this is a brief history of him. So Frank Castle was part of the United States Marines and served during the Vietnam War as a point man for the Special Operations Unit. He was decorated with various honors for heroism in the line of duty. While on leave, he took his family to Central Park, where they witnessed a mob killing. Fearing exposure, the mob killed Frank's family in cold blood, though Frank survived the attack. With the police in the pocket of the mafia and justice never served for their deaths, Frank left the Marines in order to seek vengeance on his own. He wages a war against all criminals, using his combat experience in order to take them out permanently. He clashes with various heroes as he takes out those various criminals, including Spider-Man, Captain America, and Daredevil, with their ideals about justice never quite lining up. So, I kind of abridged that a little bit because he has a massive history with Spider-Man, Captain America, and Daredevil specifically. I didn't want to get too much into that because I have seen the first 7 episodes and going into it a little bit more may give you a few spoilers, so I thought I'd save that for our Daredevil special when we inevitably do that. But getting into our headlines of the week, I guess the first one that we should probably touch on is the fact that we did get a final Daredevil Season 2 trailer, which, unlike the 2 previous ones that we got, which focused specifically on Punisher and Elektra, this one saw the introduction of Stick again, and who I think might be Madame Gao as well, towards the end. Now, this is actually a lot of stuff that I haven't seen yet, so this trailer is like super exciting, especially for me, and oh my god, it looks so great. I couldn't believe it. Like when it came out, I was like, I don't know if I want to watch this or not, and then I watched it and I was like, whoa, okay, I'm glad I did watch that, because I think very, very little of what's in this trailer happens in the first half of the season, which is insane.
Show off.
Well, the episodes are available for press, so it's like, yeah. I can't wait for Caitlin to see them, though. I demand, in fact, that Caitlin live messages me as she's watching. Because it's a lot. That's it. That's all you're getting from me. That's it. That's the one thing you're getting out of me. But
until our Daredevil special.
Until our Daredevil special, but yeah. Yeah. Guys, in fact, if you want to live tweet at me, do it at me. Don't do it at the podcast Twitter, because just in case you get ahead of Caitlin, I don't want you to spoil her, but by the time some of you are watching, I'll probably be finished, knowing my likely obsession. So feel free, if you want to, live tweet me your reactions as you're going along. And yeah, what did you think of this trailer?
It looks pretty great, and I'm just ready to watch it, which I'll be doing in like 8 hours. So
I know, it's so exciting, so crazy. But I guess we won't say too much more on Daredevil, because obviously we have a lot. We're going to have a lot of Daredevil coming up over the next few days. So that's it on Marvel's side of the news.
And in delightful DC news, we got episode stills for the Supergirl Flash crossover that's airing in 2 weeks. And I'm so excited. We see Barry hanging out with Kara, and we see the Flash and Supergirl hugging at one point, which is adorable. And we see them hanging out at the DEO, where Lucy is also notably hanging out, and she's looking very much like she's wearing a DEO uniform. So I'm guessing we'll find out in the next episode that she joins the DEO, which I think is really a great move, so they're not getting rid of her.
Yes, basically. Yes, queen. She's going to be so great at the DEO, and I'm so glad that she is not leaving. Like, that's all I wanted, was for her not to leave. We spoke about this when James and Lucy broke up, about wanting her to stick around and wanting to her to have a really good relationship with Kara, and hopefully we'll get that. That's, I was really excited about seeing her in the DEO uniform, and, you know, everything to do with Kara and Barry. And it's really bad, but seeing them together makes me go, oh, I really want Barry to stay. Even though we know he can't stay.
And we have a shot of Barry, Kara, and James, and I tweeted out, like, this is my new OT3.
Oh, so. Yeah. Oh, yeah. It's, imagine that gif, if you've seen any variation of the gif of, like, now kiss. That was me yesterday. Oh, this is,
yeah, and
so
we also
good.
Got a little teaser of Barry and Kara about to race each other, which is really great, and I just cannot wait. It reminds me of how they had Barry and Oliver, like, about to have a play fun fight at the end of their first crossover. So you always got to kind of have them compare their powers, which is hilarious.
Yeah.
Oh. I'm so excited for this.
Me too. It's going to be so good. So good. It's like, I kind of want to fast forward, but then I've realized that, like, Daredevil is between these two points, and it's like,
And the next episode of Supergirl is going to be really good.
Yeah.
Because it's all about Jean.
Yes. Yeah. Which we'll get into a little bit more during our TV roundup and talking about the episode from this week.
Yeah, they're really starting to promote this crossover, which I'm very excited about.
Yes. Same. So can't come soon enough.
Utterly delightful.
Utterly delightful. Yeah, we're stuck on that word, guys. It's not going away.
It's so perfect. And Kara's wearing a yellow dress in some of those pictures.
I know.
Just like delightful.
I know. I really love that dress. In fact, if anyone sees anything around and about on Tumblr with someone who's ID'd that dress, I want it. So please send me a link, because I know there's a load of fashion blogs out there for, like, TV shows and stuff who, it's like their whole mission is to find the clothes from, like, TV shows. I really do want that yellow dress. So if you see anyone who's ID'd it, give me a heads up, because I love that dress and I want it. Not a materialistic person a lot of the time, but that is a damn nice dress. But let's get into our sort of TV roundup of what was on this week. So again, guys, a lot of the DC stuff is off at the moment. Flash, again, doesn't come back until the 22nd. Arrow is not back until the 23rd. And Legends of Tomorrow will be back on the 31st of the month. But we did get, of course, a new Supergirl episode. But we also got the second episode of Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D. after its mid-season break. So where would you like to start? Would you like to start with S.H.I.E.L.D. or Supergirl?
Why don't we start with S.H.I.E.L.D.?
Cool.
Because it was kind of an odd one.
It was a little bit odd. Not in a way that kind of meant it was a bad episode. It was a great episode, a great continuation from last week. Set up some really interesting things, but for narrowing it down for a talking point, it was a little bit difficult because not a massive amount happened, though thematically it set up some really great things for the rest of this half of the season. You know, Unward is still really creepy as hell, and that goopy thing at the end was like really disgusting.
My first thought with that was just feeling bad for Brett Dalton. It looked, I was like, did he just get caramel sauce poured over him? Because that's what it looks like.
Yeah, it looks like slime. You know, if you ever watched those, I don't know if you guys got them at all, but we used to have a lot of kids shows that used like slime, and you'd get it thrown all over you, and you'd get thrown into like slime pits and that sort of thing. Maybe that's just the UK. That sounds like a very UK thing to be doing
we had
to
some
kids.
Of those too.
Yeah. But yeah, I was like, oh, it looks really disgusting, but good on Brett Dalton for being a good sport with that. And obviously we saw a little bit more of Daisy and Lincoln's relationship advancing, though Hunter doesn't seem too into them as a couple, as he calls them shake and bake.
Oh, Hunter. Hunter was just a low point in this episode for me.
He was.
I'm not sure I'm going to be able to handle the spinoff if it's just him and Bobby at the forefront, because Hunter has kind of become intolerable for me lately.
Yeah, he's kind of, he's making, I said this to Caitlin before we started recording, he's making even more terrible decisions than Clint Barton does, and that's saying something. So I'm not sure how that's going to work out, because he kind of went off half-cocked and without a plan and really did actually endanger everyone else on that mission to, I mean, kudos to him for bringing, like, actual weapons, even though he was told not to, because really, not bringing weapons at all was kind of stupid of them, because a lot of the time things do go very, very wrong on every single mission that they ever do. But at the same time, he kind of messed up pretty badly through this whole episode and almost like kind of blew a load of people's covers, which would have led to, I don't know, oh, Hunter.
It felt like they were a little bit trying to excuse it because he's the one who finds the kid, but like, that doesn't make all the horrible things he did that put everyone in danger okay.
Yeah, and actually, the one thing that I found kind of interesting about this as well is that obviously we're right on the horizon of civil war. And a lot of the debate about this is going to be Bucky Barnes's accountability in respect to what he did when he was the Winter Soldier, and if he should be held accountable for his actions when technically he was brainwashed. I thought it was a really interesting thing to introduce Carl Creel back in as someone who was brainwashed by Hydra, even though he was a criminal prior to that, or had a criminal record prior to that. And I thought it was really interesting to set up like almost tendrils of that debate on a ground level with Carl Creel versus Hunter and Hunter's reaction, his very emotional reaction to Carl Creel in respect to, obviously he's still really upset about everything that happened in the previous season. So I thought that was a really interesting ground level thing to start threading in the like lead up to Civil War. I don't know if you picked up on that or if that is just if that's just me.
I didn't even remember who he was, so all of that did not register. I didn't even remember that we had seen him until they were like, "Remember the last time we saw him?" And I was like, "No, I really don't."
Do you remember now?
No, I still don't.
He is from the beginning of the last season when they're all kind of undercover trying to get the Terrigen Crystal. And you've got Lucy Lawless's character, and she touches the Terrigen Crystal and her arm goes all, she starts the Terrigenesis process and Carl Creel comes in to take it back, to steal it back for Hydra, and he flips the car and kills her. And Hunter was in the car. He was the only one who survived that. Do you remember now? Jog your memory.
I don't.
No?
Shows how much the show, like, stays in my consciousness, which is not very much.
Oh, no. Oh, no. Oh, well. But he was... Hunter has a very emotional reason for, like, not being okay with Carl Creel, but I just thought that was an interesting little plot thread to have in there. But the biggest thing I want to talk about is something that we've kind of talked about before and the show has addressed before, which is the Inhumans and their choice to go through Terrigenesis or not, and the kind of theory about what would happen if it was, if you were able to cure them of being Inhuman. And obviously in this episode, what we discover is that the reason that Carl Creel was not kind of killed by the Terrigen rock that he touched at the beginning of season two is because his blood is immune to Terrigenesis. In fact, when you introduce his blood and DNA to someone with a dormant Inhuman gene who has not undergone Terrigenesis, it acts as a vaccine and reverses it and gets rid of the gene altogether. Now, obviously, this does not go down well with Daisy, because we see Daisy and Lincoln almost switch positions, in that in the last season, Lincoln was all about how the Terrigenesis process is a gift, being able to have powers is a gift, and you should be, like, really thankful for it and use it really responsibly, and so on and so forth. This time around, we see Daisy taking that on, and Lincoln being like, well, actually, not everyone should be given the option to go through Terrigenesis. In fact, even in the city, not everyone was given the option to go through Terrigenesis. It was a very selective thing. So Lincoln fully believes that if there is a chance to be able to give a vaccine to people in order to stop the spread of Terrigenesis through, like, the fish oil capsules, then they should be allowed to make that choice for themselves. Whereas Daisy, on the other hand, thinks it's a birthright and they shouldn't give the vaccine to them because it's just who they are and it would wipe them out, and she doesn't want that. She wants people to, I guess, accept their birthright and become Inhumans. Now, this is something, this is well-trodden material that has happened over years and years and years and years in, like, X-Men comics, for example. But what did you think about this debate turning from something theoretical to something that is actually now very, very real? And in fact, who would you side with in this? Do you think that the Inhumans should be given a choice in having the vaccine or going through Terrigenesis eventually if that's what they want? Or do you think Daisy is right in that being an Inhuman is a birthright and they shouldn't remove that gene?
I sided about 120% with Lincoln on this, because choice is really important. And he brings up, like, what I was thinking, like, oh my God, his name just left me. Andrew. Wow. Like, wouldn't Andrew have wanted a choice before turning into a giant murdering monster and destroying his life? Like, not everybody gets to transform into, like, keep their same look and just have really cool powers. Like, this really destroys a lot of people, and it really changes a lot of people and who they are. So I think it makes a lot of sense for there to be a choice involved. And it just, I think Daisy's looking at it from a very privileged point of view, in that she didn't, like, physically change. She didn't get, like, scaly or blue or anything. And she has cool powers. So that's pretty cool for her, but that's not the case for everybody.
Yeah, I agree that I think people's agency is what's important here. In fact, a lot of people may take that risk in respect to whether or not they want to go through teragenesis or not. But they should be given the option of being supplied with a vaccine. And I understand Daisy's fears, though, that if the government, for example, became aware of this, that they would basically make it mandatory for everyone to take the vaccine so that they didn't have a almost widespread kind of uprising of powered people. And I get that that's Daisy's fear, but at the same time, I think they should be given the choice of whether or not they want to go through teragenesis or not. So I do see Daisy's point. I do. But at the end of the day, I think it should be down to the individual with what they want to do. And in fact, there's no way for them to know exactly who has the gene or not. So again, the choice should be down to them, not made by anyone else on their behalf. So while and the other important thing is that anyone who has already gone through teragenesis, this vaccine will not work on them. So that's it. Once you've gone through teragenesis, it will not remove those powers. So there are already a percentage of Inhumans out there already. So yeah. It's kind of one of those things where it's like, this is probably also going to divide the team a lot as well, with people who believe that the vaccine should be made available to people, and people who just don't think that it should be something that is out there at all. So this could even, in fact, start leading to maybe a little bit of what happens for, like, Bobby and Hunter to maybe split off. I don't know. I can see this really fracturing the team a lot.
I guess we'll see. I just think, for Daisy's point of view, that it's very dangerous to base your opinions just solely on fear of the worst case scenario, because you don't actually know what it is. And so you're making your judgments out of simply hypotheticals. And I always just come back to what you said, that I think agency is the most important thing. And removing that either way is an issue.
Yeah, absolutely. So we do get to see a meeting of a lot of different world powers, or people representing their parts of the world, actually discussing what to do with the Inhumans as well. And I think this is going to start, it'll start rippling out further and further and further, because you see this a lot in the X-Men comics as well, is, you know, the Mutant Registration Act and knowing who has powers, who doesn't, and controlling people who do have powers, and almost like segregating them, and so on and so forth. And there's a huge amount of discrimination. So there is a way that this would very realistically spiral out of control. But again, it's just kind of one of those things where it's like, choice is such a huge thing, especially when they become aware of, like, some of the dangers of having powers and the people that will target them, both in respect to, like, Andrew, who's still out there, by the way. You know, we've been so focused on Hive, you know, we can't forget that Andrew is still out there waiting to, I guess, take out more unworthy Inhumans. And it's such a dangerous world either way. But yeah, it's all about choice. It's all about choice. And no matter what, people should have the choice whether or not they go through teragenesis. And at the moment, they don't have that choice. If they have anything to do with, or if they have anything that goes towards, like, the fish oil capsules or coming into contact with that at all, they have no choice. It's activated in them, and then that's it. And that's not fair, because we've seen the devastating impact that it's had on some people's lives, like Joey. You know, he was happy, he was in love, he had a great life, and it literally decimated it because he couldn't control his power and he hurt people that he loved. And we do see it in respect to the other way, with someone like Yo-Yo, who gets a handle on her powers and starts using it for good where she lives. So yes, these are things that have happened to them, but again, it's kind of one of those things where it's like, they should have had the choice whether or not they wanted to go through that in the first place. But I guess it's a debate that we're going to see in show quite a lot as we carry on through this part of the season, especially if they actually develop Carl Creel's blood into a vaccine.
Yeah, then we'd have to be finding out, like, how do you find people to give it to? Because it's not necessarily practical for them to mass produce it for the entire population. So how do you go about finding people with the gene to go give them the choice? Like, that's not easy.
I know, but even then, if you start discovering a way to find people with the gene, if that falls into someone else's hands, they'd be able to seek them out. Much in the way Project Insight in Winter Soldier worked, you know, being able to seek out people with the potential for powers and becoming, I don't know, either an asset or a threat. You know, if that fell into someone else's hands, you could have someone going out and taking them out on a mass scale, or you could have someone going out and trying to turn them into an army. So there's a lot of debate about what could happen here with or without this vaccine. But I think the vaccine is going to be a trigger for a lot of wider discussions in universe, I think. And I mean, it's just playing off a lot of themes that we've already seen coming in respect to the Winter Soldier and, I guess, Civil War coming up as well, you know, and the accountability of people with powers.
It's all very interesting.
Yeah, but I guess that's really it, unless you have anything else to add for Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D.
No, I guess I'm just wondering if the movies are ever going to acknowledge any of this is going on. Seems doubtful.
It does seem doubtful, because the Russo brothers have said that they don't watch S.H.I.E.L.D. So they've admitted that they're not connecting it like that way. So things that are happening in the TV shows, they're not connecting into, especially in Civil War, it's not going to connect into Civil War. But I wonder if maybe they might for Infinity War, because it seems a little ridiculous that it's all the other way around, that S.H.I.E.L.D. is reacting to things that happen on the movie side, but it's not happening the other way around. And the thing is like, huge things are happening in this show that would realistically impact the wider world of the movies, especially exactly. when you get people like the American government involved, and now representatives of different governments across different continents. And also, you know, you have the president getting involved in certain things as well. When you've got huge organizations like that getting involved in this, the Inhuman problem, like, you know, that would realistically impact other people like Captain America. It doesn't make any sense that it wouldn't even get a mention, because I would find it difficult to believe that the Avengers or the new Avengers would not be aware of this situation going on, especially because they've still got connections back to S.H.I.E.L.D., especially after Age of Ultron. So it's, they want to tout this tagline, it's all connected, but the simple fact of it right now, it's not. And the thing is, they need to make up their mind as to whether or not shows like Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D. and Daredevil and Jessica Jones and upcoming series Luke Cage and Iron Fist do actually take part in that same universe. Like, they need to make a solid decision whether or not that's something they want, because at the moment it's really disjointed and confusing, because they're, like, retrospectively adding in connections on the TV side. Like, I don't know. It's really weird, and I just want them to acknowledge it one way or the other.
Yeah, I just feel like this Inhumans thing going on is clearly something that should get some kind of mention in the films as existing. Because if you've got this portion of the population is popping up with powers, you would think that that's something the superheroes start getting interested in.
Yeah, and not only just interested in, like, the fact that it would be on, it would be in the media, it would, and especially with the United Nations getting involved with the Sokovia Accords in Civil War, like, wouldn't technically powered people who are going out and acting essentially as superheroes or acting as, like, I guess it's like vigilante justice. It's the same thing that Jessica Jones and Daredevil do, essentially. They're not a government body. They are not a recognized body in the eyes of anyone. And the Sokovia Accords are supposed to hold them accountable. And whether, we don't know yet, the movie's not out, so we don't know if that's isolated specifically to just the Avengers, but it would kind of make sense that even on like a tangent, like that they would be covered by the Sokovia Accords as well. I don't know. The fact that a lot of this is mimicking ideas that will potentially come up in Civil War, and the fact that they are going to be such a huge force, like the fact that potentially they're not even going to get a mention in Civil War, you know, you don't even need to bring them into the story as a whole. Like, you don't need to actually show the Inhumans, you don't need to necessarily show footage, though that could be a way of doing it, is in the background of a scene or something, show something like a news report on Inhumans in the background on a TV, or have General Ross mention it when you're introducing the Sokovia Accords in respect to being like, you know, in this and the Inhuman situation. You know, it's that simple. You don't need to go into it in great detail. You can just have something in the background or a line, but that would be enough to connect the two and show that they're aware of it. I don't know. It's like a frustration.
Yeah, and just the more they try to ramp up the scale of the show, the more blatantly obvious it becomes that it's kind of a shortfalling of the connected universe.
Yeah.
Which gets a little distracting at times.
It does, because the thing is if they don't want these things to be connected, that's fine. If you don't want your TV universes and your movie universes connected, that is a valid decision. In fact, DC are doing that exact thing. They are having a separate universe for their movies and a separate universe for their TV shows. And you know what? For right now, that is really working out for them. Their TV shows are doing incredibly well. People are really invested in them. But I can't say much about the movies because we've only got Man of Steel to judge it on. But, you know, that's operating in a completely different universe. And, you know, in fact, with the idea of the multiverses set up in The Flash, you can genuinely believe that, you know, the DC TV universe could exist in a different Earth and a different timeline to the movies. Like, you know, that's fine, but when, as an organization, you are basically saying, it's all connected, isn't this great? We've connected everything together, it's fantastic, and it's really not. Like, you can't tout that tagline without connecting it to your TV shows. You can't make your TV shows do all the legwork. That's unfair to them. Especially because I would imagine that they knew what Winter Soldier was going to do, and the fact that they allowed Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D. to go ahead, knowing that essentially Winter Soldier was going to destroy the entire premise of that TV show. You know, I don't know. I have a lot of issues with how they're connecting everything together and how much they're working together or not. But I guess time will tell, and we'll see if anything happens post-Civil War with trying to connect everything together.
We will see. But yeah. Shall we move on to something a bit more positive?
Well.
Sort of. Positive in that it was amazing.
Yes. Yeah.
We are obviously referring to Supergirl, which this week was Falling, the episode about Kara being affected by red kryptonite. And I just want to say, this was easily the best episode of the series so far. Do you agree?
I absolutely agree. I thought this episode was fantastic because the thing with the show is that it's done such a good job of setting up these characters thus far, and even setting up Supergirl as a really positive force in a lot of ways within National City, and setting everything up and the narrative that Cat Grant has built up and so on and so forth. And basically at this point in the season, with this many episodes till the finale, and throwing something in that basically tears that all down was such a brave move. Because this episode just basically amplified a lot of stuff that we'd seen simmering under the surface, that, like, Kara always makes so damn sure that she basically stays as positive as she possibly can, but there's always that underlying anger that's been there that they've touched on ever so slightly throughout the whole of this season, and this just amped it up and gave us an episode that kind of, like, threw the whole thing open and was just like, yeah, it tore down a lot of the relationships that they've tried so hard to build up to this point, and they're gonna have to rebuild them now in the time that it takes to get to the end of the season, and there's so much that's damaged, and it was just such a brave move to have this episode right now at this point in the season, and I loved it. I thought it was incredibly clever, and I just, for as devastating and as dark as it was thoroughly enjoyable.
Agreed. So, and let's just say Melissa Benoist was phenomenal in playing Kara's kind of descent and then her horrible remorse when she is cured and remembers everything she did. She was phenomenal in this episode.
Yeah, again, I'm so glad that she's playing Supergirl. So glad. Because I always really liked her in Glee. Like, I always thought she was pretty great in it. And the thing is that I think this series has allowed her to come into her own so much and showcase a lot of her ability as an actress. Like, there's subtleties in a lot of the stuff that she does. And in this one episode, being able to go from what is essentially a completely different character back to the Kara that we have grown to love since the first episode is insane. The fact that she was able to, in the space of, what, it runs for about 40 minutes, right? Give or take, if you take out all the ad breaks. Like, it just blows my mind, like, how amazingly she pulled that off.
Yeah, massive props. But to kind of get into what we saw in this episode, Kara is the Red Kryptonite. When it affects Kara, it pretty much starts bringing what she says is that every horrible thought she's ever had, she just can't stop herself from expressing and acting on. So I think it's interesting to think about some of the things she does and says that are clearly things she's then thought about before, like her reaction to Alex and saying that Alex hates her and that's why she killed Astra, or the fact that she could make the city worship her. And I find it interesting to think about her having that thought and then just being so horrified at herself and then, like, locking it down as much as possible, because that's not who she is. But we all have these dark thoughts at times that don't reflect our actual personality. And so I just kind of imagine her having some of these horrific thoughts and just, like, closing them down because they're so horrifying to her, and then now she's completely acting on them. And it's interesting to see how that builds on the anger that has been touched on more than once, that is clearly a through line they're playing, that she does have this anger inside her over her past and her loss. And I think that's really interesting. So what was the most powerful thing that she said for you?
Oh man. Oh God. I think for me, the most powerful stuff was the stuff with Alex. It has to be, because the thing is with a lot of this, the closest relationship, the most developed relationship that we've had is everything between Kara and Alex. And it still remains one of the central things in this whole series. So seeing her basically turn on her sister, but in a way that you can kind of see where a lot of those feelings have come from, and they're just amplified, like, that was the most powerful thing for me. And just seeing it all coming out into the open, and I guess seeing Alex's reactions to that, like, it was really, like, emotionally devastating. It was horrible. It was so difficult to watch and yet so riveting at the same time. And yeah, it's just a relationship that I'm so invested in. So seeing it, like, turn like that, and Kara basically just saying, like, these terrible, terrible things, like, it was so hard to deal with because I'm so invested in those two as sisters.
I think what's also really powerful about that is that Alex acknowledges the truth behind some of it, because she said as much in the pilot, too. She says, you know, I used to be jealous of you because you were my superpowered sister kind of thing. So we already know that that's partially true. But I was really happy to see her be like, there is some truth to what you said, because she kind of calls her out for encouraging her to dress frumpy and not reach her potential, basically. And so she's... Alex acknowledges there is some truth to that, and that's something they're going to have to work on. And I think that's so powerful to show these two adult women who love each other but acknowledge that there are issues in their relationship, as there are in any relationship, and showing the willingness to actually do the work to keep their relationship healthy. And I find that so refreshing, because it's just something we never see. Like, acknowledging there's work that needs to be done, and we are going to fix this. We are going to work through this. And I just found that really powerful, too.
Yeah, that was such... It's such a great way to approach it as well. Because, I mean, the one thing that the Red Kryptonite has done, and as damaging as it actually was, is that as... The way that obviously this came out is not ideal. The way that Kara has these feelings become known is not the best way that they could have ever have dealt with them. But the fact that there's a kernel of truth to each one, even though potentially she doesn't genuinely feel these things in exactly the way that she says them, like, that they're going to eventually address them and work on it together, like... I love this show so much for basically being like, yes, okay, the Red Kryptonite is terrible. Yes, it has made Kara do things that are not in her nature, but also it only really amplifies what's already there to a more devastating level. And the fact that they're kind of like, and that is something that we're now going to address in these relationships, because it's something that is still there even when the Red Kryptonite is taken away. Like, it's just so great. So great. And I mean, it's by far not the only relationship that was affected by this, but it's definitely the one that was the most powerful for me.
Yeah, so let's kind of mention some of the other ones that were affected. We have Kara makes her move on James, basically, which is so uncomfortable. She, like, insults Lucy, which are, like, clearly these petty little jealous thoughts she had. Like, she doesn't really think that, but she's just feeling jealous and petty, and we've all had those moments, and those come to the surface, and she makes her move on James at the club, and he is like, this is not you, what the heck? So he, at the end of the episode, kind of asks for some space from her, which I was a little bothered by the fact that he was like, I didn't know you had this kind of anger in you. Like, we already addressed earlier in the season that it's not okay for women to be angry. And then he's kind of not okay with her having anger. And that did bother me a little, because he expressed his own issues with Black men not being able to express their own anger. So I feel like if we ever do get those two moving forward as a couple, that's something they're going to need to work out with. He's going to need to accept that she has that side of her, and it's okay for her to have that side of her, but she needs to express it in a healthy way. So that did rub me the wrong way a little
bit. I have to agree with that. Like, this is something they definitely need to address if they do want them to eventually explore this relationship, because they can't have that double standard. You can't have James want one set of ideals for him and impose another set on Kara. Like, that's monumentally unfair. That's not okay. Like, they have to all come from the same place. There has to be this equal footing for both of them. And right now, I don't think that they're in the right place at all to move forward in respect to a relationship until they clear a lot of this stuff up. And, you know, that's also okay, the fact that they're not ready to move forward, but, you know, without romance on the table as well, like, that's definitely something that they're gonna need to talk through, because, yeah, I don't know, it's really unfair to think that Kara can't get upset or angry about things. It's, yeah. Okay, yes, it needs a healthier outlet, but...
I do wonder how much of James asking for space was about that and how much was about just him not being ready to hear what she had to say, because he stops her when she's about to say that she has feelings for him. And he's like, don't finish that sentence. So it could be that, you know, that's a minor worry for him. And his biggest concern is that he's really recently off this breakup with Lucy, and they've had history and a lot of back and forth, and she is basically saying, I'm breaking up with you because of your feelings for Kara, and FYI, she feels the same, and I just don't think he's ready to deal with that yet. So it could be that he's using that as a front for wanting space to deal with it, but it's hard to tell.
It is really hard to tell, and I guess we'll, as obviously the next couple of episodes play out, I'm sure that we'll get more hints as to whether or not it is something that he really believes, or whether or not it's like something that he's using as a scapegoat to basically be like, okay, I need space, I need to get out and deal with this on my own terms and in my own time. But in the same breath, like, I would really have respected him more if he'd done it with more honesty, if he just outright said to her, because they have a really good relationship, they have a really good friendship anyway, if he just said, look, I'm not ready to deal with this right now. I've just come out of a breakup with Lucy. I would really rather, you know, kind of figure things out with a little bit of space. I wish he'd just been honest with her if that was the case.
And it could be that he's not even quite aware of it. Like, not everyone's super in touch with every single emotion they're feeling. So.
Yeah.
It's hard to tell. I think it's just everyone is really messed up after this, and people are maybe saying and doing things they don't entirely mean as a way of getting a little space, which is understandably human, but is a little disappointing. But,
yeah.
Another relationship quickly. Kara gets Siobhan fired from her job. Siobhan gets a clip of Supergirl letting a Fort Ross escapee go and wants to give it to Kat to be like, look, we're going to change the conversation about Supergirl, which Kat's like, no. So Siobhan decides she's going to send it to Perry White, and Kara overhears her talking to it. So she prints out the email, deletes it, and gives it to Kat. And Kat is just like, the one thing I demand most from everyone who works for me is loyalty. You don't have that because you went behind my back. She very publicly fires her and says, I've talked a long time to Perry, so you don't have a job there either. So basically, you'll never work in this town again, sort of thing. So she gets fired and won't talk to Wynn afterwards. So this, and in an interview, Italia Ricci said that this was going to be kind of what starts her descent into becoming Silver Banshee, which does not surprise me because that was cold. But then she sort of also brought it on herself.
She did a little bit. And this episode had Kat, like, she was very Miranda Priestly in this episode with the public firing. Like, it's that thing at the start of The Devil Wears Prada where it's like, 1 year at this company, like, will make or break my career. Like, if you don't stick it out for, like, a year, then you basically put, like, a big red flag in your CV saying that you weren't good enough, basically. And that kind of... She reminded me so much of Miranda Priestly in this episode. But, yeah, I kind of like that even though Kat basically needs to disavow Supergirl in this episode because, you know, you can't really connect yourself with that, with someone who's doing what Supergirl is doing when she's on that rampage. Like, it's still really nice to have seen that behind closed doors, she still had that loyalty to Supergirl. So, I don't know, I kind of, as horrible as this was for Siobhan, that it was still a really interesting choice to keep taking with Kat and her loyalty to Supergirl and the narrative and everything that they've built up to this point in the media with Supergirl. So, yeah, kind of as horrible as a lot of this stuff was as it played out, I was still really invested in what it did for certain character arcs, especially for Kat.
Yeah, so let's talk about Kat. Supergirl, after she's been red kryptonited, Kat summons her to be like, will you tell me what was going on here so I don't have to feel bad about it, basically. And Supergirl basically says, I quit being a hero, and she throws Kat off her balcony and, like, throws basically to her death, and then decides kind of on a whim that she's going to save her, and is like, this is true power, like, deciding life and death. So that was really horrifying. And so that's when Kat kind of disavows her. But she has this moment, you see, where she's, like, wiping tears from her face, like, after she's done it. And, like, James and Wynn are like, there's something wrong with her. And she's like, I believe you and that you're trying to do something about it. But until then, I'm looking out for the well-being of everyone in the city. And until you fix her, we have to warn them to stay away from her. So she was, despite it hurting her, she was doing what was best for the city, which is very powerful and shows this real depth to Kat. And then at the end, like, Supergirl comes and sits on her balcony, and Kat is very supportive of her and just kind of lets her sit there at the end and just sits with her. So I think they have this wonderful mentor-mentee relationship going on. And it's really interesting that Kat very much could tell something was wrong with her and was acknowledging that, but also being practical about doing what was right. So I thought this was very interesting for Kat.
Yeah, I did too. But it also makes me really disappointed still that they haven't come that Kara still hasn't come clean to Kat about who she really is. Because I really, really do still think that that relationship would be great in Kara's day-to-day life as well with Kat. Though I think that maybe Kat does kind of know anyway, that it would be really great for her to officially know and be in the know, and for Kara to be completely honest with her. This made me really, really want that even more, because that would be as equally powerful a storyline continuing through. But yeah, I really, really like the little bit at the end where they're on the balcony. I thought that was a really beautiful scene between the two of them. I really love the relationships between all of the different women, the combinations of women in this show. I think it's so cleverly done. It's so carefully thought out. And it just shows so many different aspects of relationships between women. And, you know, like the professional kind, the familial kind, friendships, everything. It's so great. And I really, really did love this relationship in particular, getting even more of a highlight in this episode.
Yeah, I love when she finds her on the balcony and she can immediately tell she's back to normal. And she's not, she doesn't seem all that angry about it, like about what happened. She's just like, it's going to be hard, but you can do it, about winning the city back over, which it was very powerful to me that she isn't accusatory or anything. She's like, yeah, you scared the crap out of me, so thank you for apologizing, basically. But we have to move forward.
Yeah.
She's very practical about that. And I don't know. I think they're doing a great job with Kat. They're really doing a lot to add depth to her character.
Yeah, I agree with that. I'm looking forward to seeing how it continues on from this point, because obviously there's a lot that they're going to need to do to win the city back over. And I wonder if a lot of that not only is going to come from Kara and Supergirl, but if a lot of that's also going to come from Kat herself.
You'd think it would have to, because they've really focused on Supergirl's story being very media driven. So yeah. I don't know how they don't use the media to try and start repairing her image.
Yeah.
But we'll see. But the last one who was really affected by this episode was Hank/Jean. It's interesting because at the beginning of the episode, Kara snaps at him for not embracing who he is, which clearly is something she's thought about. Like, she's mad that he's hiding, that he's this really super powerful Martian. And then at the end of the episode, he has to make the choice whether to let Kara kill Alex and then be cured and come back knowing that she killed her sister, or basically give himself up. So he transforms in public, fights Kara until Alex can cure her, and then lets himself be taken, which there's, oh, it's such an amazing scene when Alex visits him in the cell, and he just says, I would spend 1,000 years in a cell to protect you and your sister. And they put their hands up on the glass.
Oh, God.
And he winks at her. It's this really amazing dynamic. And I'm just so always awestruck by how much he's willing to sacrifice for these two girls, that he's just come to love them like they're his own daughters. And he's willing to do anything for them, include be held captive to protect them. Just, oh, so amazing.
It really, really is. It literally, this destroyed my heart a little bit. I was like, oh God, this is awful. It was awesome, but this is awful and I hate it. This actually brought me to tears a little bit. I was like really teary-eyed and welling up over it. But it's just, I just love how much this show just focuses on found family versus blood family, and the strength of the ties between family that you've built and found on your own, even if you're not related by blood. And just, Jean continues to be one of my favorite things about Supergirl since the reveal. Like, I absolutely love it. And the fact that we're going to be getting more next week about him, like, I'm so looking forward to a Jean-centered episode. It's gonna be great. But I don't know if it was just me, but if anyone listening is like a Star Trek fan, I got ridiculous feelings when they kind of touched hands through the glass, because it made me think of the Kirk and Spock moment from Wrath of Khan. And that was a problem for me, that so I started welling up even more, because that scene is like devastating every single time. I don't know how many times I've seen that film, but every single time I turn into a blubbering mess when I get to that bit. But yeah, I don't know, just the staging of this scene was so beautiful as well.
I saw a GIF set on Tumblr that was paralleling that with the pilot of The Flash, where Barry is visiting his father in prison and puts his hand on the glass of the and his father puts his hand up. So they're basically doing the same thing. And I was just like, how could you do that? It was soul destroying. But
thanks, Tumblr.
David Harewood is such a good Jean. I really love him in this role. I think he's great.
Yeah, absolutely agree with that. I love how leading up to the Jean reveal, like, it was so easy to dislike Hank to a certain extent. And then you get the reveal and you realize a lot of the stuff that he's been doing is like it was just so masterfully done, and the kind of flip of everything. I just love it so much. He's
but so speaking
good.
Of things that made you cry, the one that got me was when Kara comes back to, and like the first thing she says is like, did I kill anybody? And just her like explaining how she felt under the red kryptonite, that brought me to tears. She is so distraught at how out of control she was and how horrible she felt the whole time. Oh, I was in tears at that point.
Oh God, it was horrifying. It was just so, I was screaming about Marvel sticking a knife in my heart last week and twisting it around. Yeah, thanks, Supergirl. It was your turn this week, apparently.
But yeah, so it looks like, you know, the last 4 episodes of the season are going to have to, like, deal with all the ramifications of this. We'll have the crossover in a week. And then we'll have the final 2, which I'm guessing will deal with Non and Myriad and all that stuff.
Yeah. Definitely.
Ugh. So, 4 episodes left.
I know. It's kind of crazy that it feels like it's gone so quickly.
So they can just go ahead and renew it anytime. That'd be okay.
Yeah, that'd be great.
I know we have unofficial confirmation, but give us official confirmation.
Yeah, official would be great. Official would, like, put our minds at rest, but I really do think it deserves a season 2 so badly. So, I'm not ready to give it up.
No, it's really finding its stride and all the feels.
Yeah. Do we have anything else for Supergirl, or?
I think that's it. Should we move on to movies?
Yeah, I mean, not a massive amount. We're right on, like, the eve of, like, Civil War and Batman versus Superman. But, like, the first thing that we had this week for movie news is we got, like, a little behind-the-scenes clip from the Russo brothers, who now have an official Facebook page and an official Instagram account. They finally found their way onto social media. And the first thing that they did is they did like a little, like the Facebook Live thing that's kind of all of the rage right now. Everyone seems to be doing this Facebook Live stuff. But they shared a little behind the scenes clip from Civil War, from where they were like mixing the sound, because they've got about a week before it like it's finished, like finished and goes out to everyone. So the sound mixing team is working really, really hard on stuff. And we got to see a little bit more about that from that scene where General Ross brings the Sokovia Accords to the Avengers, which we have seen in pretty much all of the trailers. And while they kind of like while Joe Russo like talks over some of the actual audio of this, you do manage to pick out a little bit. And at one point he says, "The past 4 years you've lived with unlimited power. The Avengers shall no longer be a private organization. Instead, they'll operate under the supervision of the United Nations panel only when and if that panel deems it necessary." So, yeah, I guess we get a little bit more of an idea of what's going on. There's another little line that you kind of hear Steve saying where he goes, "I shouldn't have done that." And it's kind of like, What shouldn't you have done, Steve? What did you do? Steve? Steve, what did you do? I don't know. It's, this movie is going to break me. Emotionally. If it hasn't already broken me emotionally.
I was gonna say, I think you're already in pieces.
I am kind of already in pieces. But it's kind of interesting to hear a little bit more for confirmation of like ideas that we've gotten from the trailers already. So yeah, only when and if that panel deems it necessary. It's kind of understandable, at least, that Steve maybe rails against that a lot, especially considering the World Security Council and the reaction from like the Battle of New York with them and wanting to like nuke an entire part of New York City and so on and so forth. So, you know, he doesn't exactly trust the any government having a hand in something like this. So yeah, I can see where this is going to fracture very, very, very much. But did you get a chance to look at this behind the scenes clip?
I did, and it's not a lot, but the movie's close.
So. Yeah, I wouldn't expect them to be giving us a lot of stuff, but yeah, it was that little tease, that little bit extra, which, you know, I'm always going to take a little bit extra. That's always good by me. The other Civil War thing that we got was some promo images on like posters and stuff. And I will hands up say these look ridiculous. Not ridiculous in an awesome way, they just look ridiculous. Like, this, the framing of them and the way that they're kind of set out, like, they're at really weird angles. Some of them, they're all portrait, but some of them look like they should be landscape, and the Civil War logo should be in landscape mode, because otherwise it just looks like Bucky is, like, landing awkwardly on his fist, and Hawkeye looks like he's standing on a wall with, like, suction cups on his boots. I don't know. It's, some of them just look absolutely ridiculous. I'm not too into them as, like, character posters. I think they look a little bit silly. I don't know about you. What did you think of some of these?
Yeah, I thought they were kind of terrible.
Yeah. Do you see what I mean about the Bucky one, where it looks like he's, like, doing, like, a one-fisted weird handstand?
Yeah, and Steve looks like he's walking up a wall.
Yeah, and Falcon just looks like you shouldn't be able to glide that way. I don't know. It's they all look a little bit weird. Like
is not their best marketing.
It's definitely not their best marketing. I'm not into these. I think Black Panthers is probably one of the best ones out of all of them, honestly. But I'm not digging them too much. But that's all that we got from like Marvel and Civil War stuff.
We got plenty of Batman v Superman, pardon me, stuff. We got some more images, which I am just so over this movie, and it has not even come out yet. I'm sick of hearing news about it.
I'm just ready
for it to be out.
It's next week, so it's like not too far away. I will say, though, that some of the headlines just keep striking me with how ridiculous it is. Like the Batman headbutts Superman, an international Batman v Superman trailer. I'm like, how much more ridiculous can this get? I don't know.
Yeah, so we got stills and an international trailer, which had some new footage and some really, like, weird stuff that Batman looks like he's, like, out in the desert looking at, I guess that's Metropolis being blown up, but yeah. I don't know. It's weird. I don't know what's going on, and I'm just over this movie already.
I'm not over the movie because I think it was Wired released a video on their Twitter account this week that was basically they recut using their video department everything to do with this movie into a rom-com trailer, so I'm like, I'm ready for this movie because I'm going in watching it as a rom-com, so I've managed to get myself hyped up for this movie in my own weird little way. So I will admit that I'm not watching any more of the actual trailers, though. I've been watching mostly the parody stuff because that seems to be getting me more excited for this movie than the actual trailers, but I guess, yeah, I'm seeing it next Friday. I've got my tickets. I'm seeing it before I drive back to Wales for Easter, so it's soon. It's very, very soon.
I feel like it's been in development. I've got, like, that Titanic gif. It's been 84 years. I've got, like, we've been hearing about this movie. I'm so sick of it.
Aw, it's almost over, and then we've got Justice League. Oh, Caitlin.
And I say that being, like, the DC person on this podcast.
I know. It's really funny how all of these parody things have, like, suddenly got me excited for, like, Batman and Superman's super gay love story. And you're just, like, there going, I'm over this already. I'm over this. I want to be done.
I just need to stop hearing news about this movie.
Oh, don't worry. From, like, next week. Well, we'll still have to do our special edition for that.
Be about, like, having seen the movie and not just, we're still waiting for this movie to come out. It's been 4 years.
Yeah. One week. That's it. That's all we've got to wait now. So
speaking of waiting for a movie, we also got a new trailer today for X-Men Apocalypse. And I don't have a lot of nice things to say. Sorry. Like, this is another movie I'm sort of bored of.
I'm not bored of it, necessarily. This trailer actually has made me the most worried about this film than any of the other ones. And I know that I was a little bit kind of worried about this movie and some of the other trailers as well. I mean, at least in this one, we do get to see Apocalypse being, like, massive and really, like, taking out some of the X-Men. I can't remember who he had in his hand, and he kind of, like, threw through a wall kind of thing, but at least we got to see him big and menacing, and the fact that he can actually change his mess and size and so on. So the biggest thing that's worrying about me for this movie is its over-reliance on CGI, like, to an insane level. Like, this is Star Wars prequels bad. And you know what? CGI isn't always a bad thing. I mean, look at the Jungle Book trailers that we're getting right now. A lot of that is CGI and on green screen, but there's a lot of money that's gone into that. This, unfortunately, is so glaringly CGI that it's throwing me out of everything. It just does not look good. It's like Indiana Jones and the Crystal Skull. It's like Yeah, like the Star Wars prequels, like there's just something so artificial about it and fake that it's just, I'm finding it really difficult to get immersed in the universe because it's just so glaringly not real. And I'm really worried about that because if that's how I'm feeling with the trailers, how am I going to feel when the movie comes out? Because it's going to be on a larger scale entirely. And I'm just really worried that I'm not going to be able to watch this film and really get into it the way that I want to, because the apocalypse storyline is so great from the comics. It's so interesting. In fact, in like X-Men Evolution and X-Men cartoons and stuff, it's like some of my favorite stuff that they did in the animated series. And I was, you know, sort of excited that they were bringing it to live action, but they've got such a huge over-reliance on CGI that it's just not looking great for me.
My problem is that it's doing a really good job of looking like every generic action movie ever. And with 87 superhero films, it's not distinguishing itself in any way for me, which is making me feel very fatigued. Like, I can be very excited for Civil War because it's doing something unique with a superhero story. But we've already got Batman v Superman, which is going to be kind of, feels kind of generic, honestly. And then this is just kind of doing the same thing. Like, oh, big bad, better go beat the big bad. He's gonna beat us up and then we're gonna have to beat him. Like, I'm having fatigue of everything doing the same thing, and none of the trailers are making me feel like it's gonna do anything interesting.
Yeah, and the thing is, don't get me wrong, I love a good action movie. I love sometimes sitting back and just seeing explosions and things getting beat up and car chases. And look, I am a not so secret fan of the Fast and Furious franchise. I'll put that out there. I love that series of films. Like, I do. I love a good action flick that's kind of a little bit on the ridiculous side as well. But like I said, I'm finding it really difficult to engage with this film. And for me, it is the CGI that's throwing me out of everything. So I'm not like picking up on a lot of like the story beats or the character stuff within the trailers, because I'm just like, I keep going, but this just looks so fake. So I guess I'm hoping if we do get another trailer, which I'm assuming that we will slightly closer to release, that maybe some of that will start looking a bit more, I don't know, polished or less artificial. But for now, I'm increasingly worried about this movie.
I want to be excited, but I'm not. So we'll see as it goes. But this one is not at the top of my list of things I'm excited for.
Yeah, and it's a shame because I love X-Men so much. I've, you know, I quite enjoyed the last two ones. So it's a little bit worrying for me. But that's it for movie news. I guess we'll move straight into Comic Corner, which again, guys, is going to be Daredevil-y themed. So if you don't want any kind of hints as to what might be coming in season two, tune out now and come back in about 2 to 3 minutes, because this week's Comic Corner is my favorite Daredevil versus Punisher storylines. So again, 2 to 3 minutes if you don't want to hear this Comic Corner. We good? Okay, so first one I've got is Daredevil number 183 and number 184. So that the Punisher had previously shown up in an issue of Spider-Man, these issues were the first time that Daredevil and Punisher had encountered each other, so it's a great basis for understanding the beginnings of their relationship. They're both on the tail of a drug dealer responsible for the death of a schoolgirl that overdosed, but have vastly different ideas on how to go about seeking vengeance. Matt, believing in the justice system, wants to see him sent to prison, but Frank, well, he wants a more permanent solution. So it sets up an interesting debate on what being a hero entails and the code of ethics Matt insists on following. And if you're looking to understand their opposing views on justice, this is a great place to start. The next one I've got is Punisher Kills the Marvel Universe. So this run takes place in an alternate reality where instead of Frank's family being murdered by the mob, they're instead caught in the crossfire of a battle between some heroes from the Marvel Universe and alien invaders. So it sets up an interesting internal debate about accountability and taking the law into your own hands as Frank finds himself on trial for the murder of several heroes, including the X-Men. So Matt takes up the role of Frank's attorney and things get interesting, to say the least. It's certainly a very morbid run, but poses some thought-provoking questions. The next one I've got is Marvel Knights Punisher number 3. So I won't give too much away about this issue, as I can say that it has a direct parallel in season 2 of Daredevil that deserves to be experienced. But know that this is one of the most fascinating and emotionally devastating meetings between Punisher and Daredevil. It's tense and forces Devil to really look at his strict ethical code and what it'd take for him to break it and become everything he's fighting against. So definitely pick this one up once you're done with Daredevil season 2. And the final one I've got is Daredevil vs. Punisher Means and Ends. So this is an excellent mini-series that sees Punisher and Daredevil caught in a power struggle between two villains attempting to take over the criminal underbelly of New York City. It puts a spotlight onto how Frank and Matt affect the world around them as vigilantes, and has perhaps the best physical fight between the two of them in any of their clashes so far. And when the issue ends, still not sure who is in the right, or if both of them are wrong about how they tackle crime in the city. And that's it, if you want to read a little bit more about Daredevil versus Punisher. But let's get into some of our feedback for the last week, which we had some great feedback this week, guys. So thank you so much for sending it in loads of different ways. So as always, I'll give you the contact details for us now. So if you want to get hold of us and leave us feedback, you can do it on Twitter, which is at Hero Hype Podcast. You can leave a comment on hypeable.com when this episode goes up on the website, or you can shoot us an email, which is herohypepodcast@gmail.com. But Gwendolyn left us a Twitter comment about the Supergirl episode this week. And Gwendolyn says, "Wow, Supergirl went dark this week. Loved and hated this at the same time. Emotional intensity was off the charts. But on Smallville, they at least had a little fun with these Red Kryptonite episodes before everything went downhill. I definitely felt a lot of things, but I'm still torn if it was for me." I do love Smallville.
Gwendolyn also responded to Karen on our last episode, who was talking about Gotham and our refusal to cover it. And Karen's going to be happy because it was just renewed for another season. But Gwendolyn says, "I'd listen to your Gotham podcast. The show has become really good in season 2. And Karen was really happy about that.
Yeah, I will put my hands up and admit I did promise Sonia, who covers Gotham for Hyperball, that when season 2 ends, I am going to watch the whole thing. I'm going to sit down while some of the shows are off air, and I am going to watch it. So I guess keep an eye on my Twitter account, because I will probably post my thoughts and feelings about it as I'm going along when I do decide to watch it."
I make no such promises.
I know. Ryan commented to us on Twitter as well and says, "I know comic movies, but I want to read Captain America and Captain America and Superman are my favorite characters. How do I choose which lines to read? There are just too many to navigate the comic universe. Have any suggestions?" I will respond to you on Twitter, but I can't remember which episode I did my Captain America recommendations in, but I know that I have done some. I'm pretty sure I've done Captain America. I know I did Winter Soldier, didn't I? I swear to God I've done Captain America. I will go back, double check that. I will send you a link to the episode for the one that I'm sure that I did Captain America recommendations for. But I probably will do Superman soon, especially after Batman v Superman comes out. So I will definitely give you some suggestions for Superman soon. So.
All right. And thank you, guys. We put out a tweet asking for you to give us a review on iTunes if you're enjoying the show, and we're putting the call up now as well, that if you enjoy the show, please go to iTunes, give us a review. It helps other people find the show. And we had two people do that.
Oh, my God.
Donnie's very excited about this. Stargazer says, best superhero podcast ever. They're so thorough with their discussion. I rarely feel like they forgot to cover something. And they're always mindful that their audience might not be so comic book savvy. Love to listen and learn something new about my superhero faves and keep up on the movie TV news. So thank you, Stargazers. And Can We Be Best Friends says, awesome podcast. I love this podcast almost as much as Steve loves Bucky.
I literally died when I saw this review. I was like, Caitlin, is this real? I still can't believe this is a real review. Thank you so much to both of you for leaving us these amazing reviews on the podcast. We really, really do appreciate it a lot. And I can't imagine anyone could love something as much as Steve loves Bucky. That's real. But I guess we love you too. Thank you so much.
Yes, thank you both for sending your reviews, and hopefully some of you other guys who enjoyed the show will also give us a review and we'll read it on the show.
Yeah. So, question of the week. Last week, we asked you if you could have any show do a comic cover recreation poster, what would it be? And Shelby replied to us and said, this comic cover as a movie poster means we'd get all these female heroes in the MCU. And it is a really, 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 really awesome comic cover for the new Hellcat comic. If you've listened to our Jessica Jones episode, Hellcat is also known as Patsy Walker. And on the cover, you have Captain Marvel, Miss Marvel, you have She-Hulk, you have America Chavez, you have Hawkeye, but Kate Bishop Hawkeye, Squirrel Girl, you know, you've Thor, you've so many characters on this, and it's basically like, yes, yes, give us this, because that would mean that we would have all of these ladies.
All right, and our question of the week for you guys this week is, what trait of yours would be amplified by red kryptonite?
Probably my anxiety.
Probably.
Oh, God. It would be horrible. Oh, how about you?
I was thinking my need to be right all the time.
Oh, God. Oh, dear. Oh, it would be so bad. Right, guys, let us know. Usual places, Twitter, Hyperbole, email. We'd love to hear from you. But until next week, I'm Danya.
And I'm Caitlin.
And we'll see you on the next episode. Enjoy Daredevil Season 2, guys. Bye.
Bye.